Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. I am your host, Hayden Grove, joined, as always, by our Cavaliers beat reporter, Chris Fedor of Cleveland.com. And last week, when we did the podcast, we said that we would be talking about the new Cavaliers uniforms. And that's exactly how we're going to start this week, because, to be honest, there's not a ton going on in the way of the NBA right now in terms of the Cavaliers. It's kind of a very slow time, I would say, a time for, you know, guys like Chris to recalibrate and, you know, re-energize for the new season. So the new jerseys came out on Monday of this week, I believe. Three new uniforms for the Cavaliers, a black uniform, a wine uniform, and a white uniform. Chris said that fans would be very happy with them, and I would actually say that there was a little bit of a mixed review with these new uniforms. So, Chris, what are your kind of initial thoughts here?
I think they played it safe. I don't think there's anything super special different about them, and I don't think there's anything that's hideous about them. They're just fine. They're basketball uniforms for these guys to wear. I like how they incorporated the gold. I thought that was a really, really good touch. I also like the black jersey a lot, personally. I think that one's going to be really, really popular. There were a few things that I would have done different. I think Cavs on the shorts, the Cavs V-net logo on the shorts of the black jerseys. It's kind of busy. I would have toned that down to the standalone V-net logo, just the V that kind of looks like the Larry O'Brien trophy. I thought that on the shorts would have been really, really cool. But overall, to me, they're fine. They're modern. They're updated. They're not fancy. They're not busy. They're sleek. And I think they did a good job. I think they accomplished with this jersey release what they wanted to accomplish. I think everything this offseason, Hayden, has been about like streamlining everything and making it as simple and recognizable as possible. And I think they accomplished that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're, you know, I like them. I do. I think they're just nice and classic and simple, and that's kind of what I enjoy about them. I think they would be fixed with something as simple as like a gold trim around the you know, the arms and the neck and all that. I think that would be perfect. But I mean, you know, it's to each their own, and I agree. I think they're sleek. I think they're simple. I like that about them. You know, I think the Cavs in the past have kind of tried to, you know, push the envelope a little bit. This is kind of pulling the envelope back, but I do love the little details. I mean, the gold really looks good. It really pops with these uniforms. And like you said, I like the logos on the shorts. The Cavs V on the black shorts is really cool. So I can't complain. I can't complain with them. You know, I'd much rather a more simple look than a more you know, with too much going on. So I'll give them a solid 7.5 out of 10. I think that they're very, very close to being, you know, 8, 9 out of 10. But I just think there's that one little thing missing, and I think it is just a little bit of trim on the neck and the arms.
Yeah, you're not the only one that said that. I heard that from a couple of different people, because without trim like that, they do in a way feel a little bit like practice jerseys.
Yeah.
But I get the sense that maybe the NBA is going to start moving towards more of the simple thing. If you look at what the Jazz did, they kind of changed up some things schematically with their colors or whatever for their jersey releases.
Yeah.
But overall, those were pretty simple as well. So I do understand what you're saying about the trim. But I think that could end up being the new norm in the NBA as we move forward, actually.
Well, the Jazz also brought back one of their it looks like they brought back one of their old school uniforms with like the mountains in the background and like the 90s font. I mean, that's, I think that's sweet. But yeah, Utah, I think went way, way, way too simple. I mean, I don't know. It's just, there's nothing jazzy about it. There's nothing Utah about it. You know, I don't know. I kind of like that. You know, I think that Cleveland at least has, you know, the color scheme that I love. It, the brand pops, the yeah, gold pops, and like, you know, the classic, the throwback to the Cavs V. Like, I think that's very cool. Utah is just like some numbers on a shirt, some like a very basic font with very basic numbers and very basic colors. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that's the way that things are going to start going moving forward. And it's interesting that you bring up the Jazz with the Cavs because, you know, part of the Cavs logo rebrand, Hayden, as you know, was a throwback paying homage to the past teams while also blending in the new. It was a combination of classic and modern. And it seems like the Jazz were trying to do some of that as well. And I wonder if we continue to get more and more jersey releases with some of these other teams, if they're going to try and do that combination of modern and classic. But we said all along that the main thing that was going to me to determine whether these jerseys were going to be successful or not, whether they were going to be aesthetically pleasing or not, was how they incorporated gold. Because gold can be a really, really good color for a team if you do it right. You know what I mean? And I feel like the Cavs, based on how they used the gold, blending it together, not having it in your face necessarily, I thought the way that they incorporated gold made me really, really like these. Maybe a little bit more than I thought I was going to initially before I saw a few advances.
Well, I mean, I think that the Cavaliers, like, I think that the stark contrast with the Jazz, I mean, it's just very, very stark. You know, it went from one extreme to the other in terms of really basic to, like, straight old school. And I think the Cavaliers did a better job at incorporating, you know, okay, we'll make it a little more updated, but we'll also keep it, you know, they brought it more to the middle, which I kind of like. They incorporated the past with the Cavs, kind of that, you know, the inline C in there, the inlined Cavs kind of font right there. But I think that they did a much better job than the Jazz. So I like them. And generally, I like them. I'm a big fan of, like, classics uniforms and classic stuff. So I really enjoyed the uniforms.
Do you have a favorite one? Is it the white? Is it the wine? Is it the black? What's your favorite one?
My favorite one, and yeah, it is the black. And I think that, like, it's obviously an homage to the uniforms the Cavs wore in 2016, because, you know, right, that's kind right of their thing now. But I like it a lot better without the sleeves, and I think it looks a lot better with the gold. It pops with the gold. So I like the black one, and I would say the white one would be my second favorite. I think, you know, I love the Cavs, kind of the Cavs throwback font there. So those would be my two. And then the third, like the one that really needs that trim, I think is the wine one. I think that's the one that really needs the border. It just doesn't, I don't know. There's something about it that doesn't, like, it just kind of blends in.
Yeah. And I totally get them wanting to do the new word mark Cleveland.
Yes.
I totally get that because that's part of the new family of logos. And if they're going to use the C without the sword, which is a new logo, and the new word mark of Cleveland, and then the Cavs with the V net, I totally get that. But cities across a chest can get kind of to me.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I think the black is my favorite. I think they did the best with that one. I think that's going to be the most popular. Those shorts are awesome as well, especially the intricate details of those. And then the white is really, really cool. The white thing that I wonder about is they've got the Cliffs logo, right? It's up in the top. It's the same color as the Cliffs logo with, like, some green and blue, whereas the other Cliffs logos with the other jersey styles, it blends more into the jersey because they changed it to gold. So I just wonder how that's going to look once we see it right away. Because you've got the gold Nike swoosh opposite the Cliffs logo, which is, like, green and blue. And I don't know that that's going to be all that aesthetically pleasing. We'll have to see once they actually start playing.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that the, you know, maybe they thought because it's gold, it wouldn't mesh well with the white, but the black and the the wine uniforms have the gold logo for the Cliffs. So I don't know why they changed it up for that one.
Yeah. I'm with you. I don't know either. But I think that jersey is going to be popular as well, that white one, just because of that logo. I think a lot of people really, really like that particular logo.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's, you know, it's cool. It's a throwback. It's also kind of updated and modern. I love it. I love that. It's awesome.
So. I also like how the gold kind of runs in between the numbers and the logo, the V-net logo on that white one. Like it's not an in-your-face gold. It's a subtle gold that kind of runs through that makes the numbers and the logo itself look a little bit different.
And what I will say, which is always the case, is that, you know, I'd like to see him in person. I'd like to see him on fans or whatever. You know, that's a whole different ballgame.
Next to the court, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, they Photoshop it on the guys and, like, you know, it you can see what it looks like. But I think there's a difference between what it'll look like in person, what it'll look like, you know, when fans are buying uniforms. So are they on sale yet?
No. So, you can pre-register at Cavs.com to get on a list where they let you know when they're going to be ready, but they're not yet on sale. It's going to happen, I want to say, I wrote it. I'm trying to get it right. So the statement jersey is coming later. I think the statement jersey is October, and then the wine jersey and the white jersey is September. If I remember right, that's what it is.
Okay. Yeah, it says Icon and Association jersey will be available for purchase online in November. Statement jersey will drop in October.
Yeah.
So which one is November?
You meant September, right?
Yeah, I'm just reading. Maybe I said November, but Icon and Association jerseys will be available for purchase online in early September. The statement jersey will drop in October.
Right. That's right.
Okay. So which one is the Icon, which one is the Association?
The Icon is wine, Association is white, and the statement jersey is the black one.
Okay, got it. So they're not adding another fourth jersey to this. These are just the three.
The City Edition is going to be coming.
Okay, so they are adding a fourth. Okay, that was my question. Okay.
So that's something that every NBA team is obviously going to have a City Edition jersey, including the Cavs.
Got it. They've had some pretty cool City Edition ones in the past, so I'm interested to see how that'll kind of play into things too.
Yeah.
All right. So we got three.
Those are the ones, Hayden, where it seems like teams, if classic and modern and simple is what the teams are going with the main jerseys. The City ones are the ones where teams kind of go and push the envelope.
Right.
Maybe the Cavs do that as well.
Yeah, I can't say that I've loved a lot of the City uniforms the Cavs have done, especially last year's. I did not enjoy that with all the different, you know, fonts. Or was that the year before? The one where they had, like, all the different fonts for Cleveland?
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame one?
Say it again.
That, like, made it seem like a tribute to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with, like, all these different letters.
That one. It was a black one.
Yeah, that's a good question.
That was last year because it is Mobley. Yeah, was not a huge fan of that one, but, you know, I think that, you know, it's for 1 year. It's fun. I don't mind them trying to do different things with it.
2 years ago, maybe that was 2 years ago because I think last year was like the throwback with the...
Yeah, you're right.
With the logo right in the middle. It's a wine jersey with a gold. Yes. It looked more like yellow. And then they had the trim was the different colors, like a blotch of yellow, a blotch of wine, a blotch of white. Like that made it seem like the ones that Austin Carr wore back in the day.
Yes, correct. Yeah, so the only reason I got thrown off is because they're offering a Mobley jersey of that, which would be Yeah, so I got thrown off by that. But you're right, it is the year before. So last year's I didn't mind, but I'm excited to see what they do this year. It'll be definitely interesting. And with the new color scheme, I think, well, they don't even have to really adhere to the color scheme, I guess, but I'm assuming they're going to try to. Maybe it'll be a gold uniform, just all gold.
That would be something. That would be a lot of gold.
I mean, they have, you know, they have the black, the wine, the white. All they need is the gold.
There's a big part of me, I don't remember when it was, a number of years ago, remember when they did the land with a gray and then had some white and some, and then some had yellow. I think there's a big part of me that expects them to do the land. I think the land of the things that they don't have currently on the jerseys, right? They've got Cleveland. They've got the standalone C without the sword. They took that away. They've got the Cavs V-net logo. Like, of the things that, that would make sense for them to do that they don't currently have, the land is the thing that's missing. So that would, I don't have any information on that yet. I haven't asked around about that yet, but that would be my guess is what they incorporate.
Yep, I that would make a lot of sense. Speaking of new uniforms, the Bengals just unveiled their white helmets. That's another.
I
love it.
Those look good. The Panthers with their black helmets. Look really good too. I'm all about it. Then the Browns have an orange helmet without a logo. So don't get me started.
Don't change it though, man. I don't know. It's, you can't change it. I don't know. I wouldn't change it. I would never change it.
We know this is the Wine and Gold Talk podcast, but we're talking about jerseys and we're talking about changes and logos and things like that. All I'm saying
is if there's any time to get distracted, it's in the middle of the off season where there's really not a lot going on before training camp.
Yes. The Browns are going to fight an uphill battle as long as they're going to be stuck on brown and orange. There is only so much good, fun, exciting, cool that you can do with brown and orange. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I just don't think that you really need exciting and fun. If you're like, just be classic, be traditional, and be yourself.
Oh, they've got the worst color scheme in the entire NFL, and they've got the worst logo in the entire NFL. It is an orange helmet.
Yeah, the worst. The logo is bad. I will agree with that. But what are you going to
do? Their logo is a giant orange helmet.
I know. You know, I liked some of the dog logos, but yeah, it's tough. It's tough out there in those streets, you know. It is. It's difficult. They need to bring, they had like a cool CB back in like the 80s, I think. They could bring that back, something like that. That'd be kind of cool. Do you remember that when they had like the CB thing? There was like
I remember that.
Yeah.
Again, when it's brown and it's orange, it's a tough combination. Unless you really go off the board.
Bring back the elf. Let's go. Come on. Update the elf. Bring back the elf. Come on. Well, if that's your only options are a dog and an elf. I mean, you're in tough straits.
In the way of the Cavs, there might be a way to modernize the elf. So that you have a little bit of modern and a little bit of classic. There might be a way to do that.
What I'm saying,
I would have to see that first before I sign up for that.
All right. Well, look at like the Green Bay Packers. Look at like the Green Bay Packers. They don't have anything. I mean, you know, I don't really care. I think it's, you know, keep it. The traditional teams keep it traditional. The newer teams can update it.
I just wonder how it would look if they did like a mean dog on a helmet. I just want to see that. Just to see if it could be modern enough and not look like something from clip art. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. Chris, there's already been a lot of change this year with the Guardians and everything else. I don't know how much Cleveland fan can take in one off season.
You're right. the city is going to rebel if there's too much change.
Exactly. Too much change at one time. Let's back it up a little bit, buddy. A lot of change going on. Well,
what about again, like a dark brown helmet? Could we do a dark brown helmet with an orange logo? That might be the way to go.
No. Just keep the damn helmet the same and get over it. Change the logo if you want. I don't care, but keep the helmet the same. Goodness gracious. I like the fact that it's like matted. It's like a matte helmet, which is cool. I think that's better.
My guy. It's an orange helmet.
I know. I understand that. Too much change too quickly. People are going to be pissed. Well, regardless, I think the Cavaliers did a good job with their uniforms. I think that, fans will like them. And I think that, you know, maybe if they're not perfect, they're good, which is very more than acceptable. But I do want to talk about the team a little bit, Chris. You have, we were talking before the podcast about, you know, just what's going on. And the only thing at the moment that really is anything somewhat even pressing is what's going on with Colin Sexton. So Colin Sexton still not signed or still hasn't had an offer sheet. There's been really no update. What is the update on Colin Sexton?
There really isn't a huge update, Hayden, because the sense that I get is that there's no rush from the Cavs and then there's no rush from Colin and his camp. I think Colin and his camp understand that there just isn't a market out there. The suitors that they had targeted and identified going into this offseason, they vanished quickly, especially during the NBA draft. And they need something to happen around the NBA to change the status quo. If Kevin Durant gets traded, if Kyrie Irving gets traded, if Donovan Mitchell gets traded, you know, those deals could have a domino effect with other teams, and it could change the salary cap situation of some other teams. And it could free up some team to have a need or more of a pressing need for somebody like Colin. So I think Colin's camp is just going to wait patiently and see if the market changes somehow, some way, see if the status quo changes somehow, some way. But the Cavs aren't going to bid against themselves. That's the other thing. They're not in a rush to get something done with Colin because they extended him the qualifying offer. Colin's camp knows how the Cavs feel about him. And Colin's camp knows what the Cavs can offer and what they can't offer. You can look at the Cavs' salary cap sheet, Hayden, and you can say, all right, there is a line that the Cavs can't cross or aren't willing to cross into the luxury tax, unless they make other ancillary moves to create some more salary cap space, which they're not that desperate to do. They feel like, and they could be wrong on this, right? Just because they feel a certain way, it doesn't mean that Colin's camp feels the same way. Just because they feel a certain way doesn't mean that the league feels the same way. But the Cavs have made what I'm told is a multi-year contract offer to Colin Sexton, one that they feel is reasonable based on the fact that he has no market and he has no other offers, and the other interested suitors don't have the kind of cap space that he would need in order to get the kind of contract that the Cavs are willing to offer him. So they're sitting here saying, hey, look, we've given you what we consider a reasonable multi-year offer. If you're interested in it, it's yours. If you're not interested in it, then go find one that's better. Right? I mean, like, that's kind of how negotiations work. And I'm told that it is close to $40 million in total money. So think of like a three-year, $40 million deal. That's about $13.3 million per year. So a little bit more than $13 million annually. So that's more than the mid-level exception. It's way less than what Colin initially wanted. I don't know that it's the kind of deal that Colin and his camp would be willing to take. There's the other thing in play here, and we've talked about this on the podcast. If Colin just plays this year on the qualifying offer, then he becomes an unrestricted free agent next year. And some of the complications of this year's offseason for him, some of the complications with any kind of discussion between Colin and other teams, some of those go away. That doesn't mean that the questions about Colin that other teams around the NBA clearly have about him in terms of his value, in terms of his role, in terms of can he be a winning player, like it doesn't mean that those things go away, but some of the variables will go away if he becomes an unrestricted free agent next offseason. So there is a big, big reward potentially if Colin just plays this year on the qualifying offer, shows that he's healthy, shows that he can take on this new role, shows that he can be a winning player, all those different things, right? Rebuild his value. There's a big reward there. But there's also a huge risk involved in taking the qualifying offer and going to unrestricted free agency. Like, what if his value doesn't increase substantially? What if he's in the same kind of situation next offseason where he's quote-unquote buried behind some other potential free agents that are more appealing to opposing teams? What if, you know, the role that he gets from the Cavs is nothing close to what he had in his first 3 years in the NBA when he was very, very productive, and he doesn't have the same kind of platform that he's used to having, so maybe he can't reboost his value in the same kind of way? What if this injury is one that has taken away some of his explosiveness, some of his athleticism? What if this injury is one where it's going to take him a little bit longer, maybe the second half of the season, to really be back to the old Colin? If you think about Darius Garland, when he tore his meniscus, it was in college. It was at Vanderbilt. He played 4 full games in college. He came back in his rookie year in the NBA. He said he didn't start feeling like himself until like the second half of the season. That's more than a year since the injury had already happened. So right. Collins happened last November. Maybe he doesn't start feeling like himself until the second half of the season. So there's some risk involved in him taking the qualifying offer, no doubt about it. There's also a big reward. So it's all about like how risky is Colin and his camp willing to get? Because I'm told, like I said, there is a multi-year contract offer that is there for Colin Sexton if he wants it from the Cavs. And it's one that keeps the Cavs out of the luxury tax. And it's one that keeps Colin here in Cleveland for a couple more years. Something that he said he wanted. It's just not at the money that he believes he should get and his camp believes he deserves.
I would guess that it's just about how he feels physically. I mean, I think, you know, if he feels like he has that step back and he feels as explosive and he looks as explosive, then, you know, maybe it's something where he would be willing to take that risk and just kind of, you know, take the year and play it on, you know, play it and try to get more money next year. Or if he doesn't feel as good, maybe he would take the 3 year, or maybe there's kind of a middle ground where he still feels good, but he still wants to take it. I mean, so when do you think this thing resolved itself by? I mean, do you think it is training camp, or do you think it is kind of, you know, in the next couple of days? I mean, when do you think things will start to pick up?
Well, the Cavs are hoping that it's at least by September, so that for some of their pre-camp get-togethers that they always have, that he can be involved in those and they can feel like he's part of the team, right? But Rich Paul has a history of taking these things into training camp and very, very close to the regular season opener. Now, the situation with Colin Sexton is different than the situation with J.R. Smith in the past, right? The situation with Sexton is different than some of the other clients in the past. But that's something that Rich is known for doing. He is willing to take the patient, risky approach and see if the market changes. So I don't know that there's a specific timeline, to be perfectly honest with you. I think there are things around the NBA that people believe could happen that could change the status quo, one of them being Donovan Mitchell, the other one being Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving could change the status quo too. But the thing that I keep going back to, even though the market could change and the status quo could change, the thing that I keep going back to is what I said coming into this offseason. Stylistically, Colin Sexton is not the kind of player that everybody is going to love.
Right.
Stylistically, Colin Sexton is not the kind of player that gets the contract that Colin and his camp want. Usually.
Right.
And the things that make him polarizing, I don't know that they're ever going to change. Hayden, I think there are always going to be questions about, should he be a point guard? Should he be a two guard? Should he be a six man? Should he be a starter? Like, how many teams in the NBA are completely comfortable with the idea of an undersized shooting guard? In today's NBA, where it's about versatility, where it's about switchability, there aren't a lot of teams that are going to be completely comfortable with the things that he brings to the table, everything that he brings to the table. So I just don't know that he's the kind of guy that is going to command the kind of money that he seems to want.
Yeah. I mean, it all makes sense. It does. It's all, like I said, there's a reason we're at this point. There's a reason that it is at a standstill. So I think if there was a definite nature to a lot of this, then okay, then he'd be in a different place. But I think it's just a lot is so much up in the air with him that we are where we are. So I guess, we'll see what his thoughts are. We'll see what the Cavaliers' thoughts are. I mean, the Cavaliers have kind of thrown their thoughts out there, right? I mean, that, they're going to give him, something in the way of near $40 million. That's what they feel he's at. So if there's anything, it's basically just in Collins' court to say, well, I can get more, or, I'm happy in Cleveland. I want to be here. So it'll be interesting to see over
obviously,
the next.
Obviously, the thing that everybody is looking at is the annual salary, and that makes a lot of sense. But I mean, I think the Cavs have telegraphed where they feel comfortable with when it comes to their annual salary. The annual salary that they're comfortable with is something between $12 and $15 million, and 15's on the high end because that could put them in the tax without other moves. So something between $12 and $15 million that also keeps them out of the tax.
Right.
Like, that's what they're hoping for. And while there is no resolution on Colin, it makes it difficult for them to have contract discussions, extension talks with a guy like Caris LeVert, because they don't know what's going to happen with Colin. So let's say Colin takes the qualifying offer, and then the Cavs know that he'll be headed towards unrestricted free agency next offseason. Well, that kind of changes things with Caris LeVert. I'm not saying that the Cavs would then feel like they have to do an extension with Caris, but I think the likelihood of them trying to come to an extension agreement with Caris, I would think that would increase. Because if Colin becomes an unrestricted free agent, and then nothing happens in terms of an extension with Caris, then Caris would be an unrestricted free agent next offseason as well. And in the span of about a year and a half, the Cavs could be looking at a situation where they lose both their options for the starting two guard spot. You know what I mean? So if Colin takes a multi-year deal, then, they lock in Colin for a couple of years at what they consider to be a number that is reasonable. Then that gives them a little bit more flexibility when it comes to Caris. There's not as much urgency to get an extension done with him. Right, there's a little bit more leeway to field trade offers for somebody like Caris. The Cavs like him. They gave up what they gave up to get him. But if Colin comes back on a multi-year deal, the need for Caris is a little bit different, don't you think?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. So what, I mean, so
just like,
do you think that they are, I mean, you know, maybe not yet, but there is a point where, you know, the carriage trade offers will start to come in?
I think it depends on what happens with Colin.
Right.
Like, I don't think the Cavs want to get into a situation where Colin is playing on the qualifying offer, headed for unrestricted free agency next offseason, and there is no path to an extension. There's no confident path to an extension with Karras, and he's also heading to unrestricted free agency without an idea in their head, a solution in their head to potentially replace him.
Right.
So I think in that kind of situation, they would try and field offers for Karras in a trade to try and get something back that is more team control, or they try and get an extension done with Karras that they consider relatively team friendly that keeps him out of unrestricted free agency at the same time that Colin would be an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, I think obviously Colin's going to be the first domino, right? I mean, it's got to be something where, you know, he...
You would think.
Yeah. And it's just a matter, like I said, it's a waiting game. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, and I think there's obviously... there's obviously a situation where Colin plays on the qualifying offer and there's no deal done with Karras in terms of an extension because they can't come to a number. Like, that is a reality that could happen this offseason.
Right.
So it's just something to pay attention to.
Right. Right.
But I think, like, I think in the case of Karras, I think it's not as polarizing as Colin and the situation with the contract extension talks, but like Karras isn't liked by everybody either, stylistically. You know what I mean? Like, his game and the way that he scores and the way that he's effective is not for everybody. So some of the variables that exist with Colin that make negotiations tough when it comes to assigning a monetary value to what he brings to the table, some of those discussions with Karras are equally as different.
Right. Right.
Or, I mean, is equally as complicated, even though there are some differences with them as players and the situation that they're in.
What do you think, I mean, come opening night for the Cavaliers, who's on the team, who's in the starting lineup in terms of the guards, like in terms of those two?
I think if Karras is back and Colin is back, I think Karras would probably be in the starting lineup. There's a lot of time for that to be figured out. J.B. Bickerstaff is the kind of guy who is willing to go unconventional, number one, and J.B. Bickerstaff's the kind of guy who's going to make somebody earn it. So that opportunity is going to be there for Isaac or for Ojai Agbaji or for Karras or for Colin if Karras and Colin are both back. And he's willing to, you know, have a true competition for those spots, especially because that one is perceived to be more open. I mean, I still feel like Colin's going to be back in some capacity.
Right. Do you think he'll take the deal?
I'm confident that Colin's going to be back in some capacity.
Do you think he'll take the deal that they gave him, or do you think he'll play, or do you think he'll wait for another one? You know, what is your final verdict on that?
I sense that Colin is a bet on yourself kind of guy.
Yeah.
I sense that his agency is a bet on yourself kind of agency.
Yep.
So I don't think Colin would take a multi-year deal for the kind of annual salary that the Cavs are willing to give him right now. That's my sense of the situation. I think he would be more likely to play on the qualifying offer, hit unrestricted free agency, bet on himself that he can reboost his value and he can get the kind of contract that he hasn't been offered this offseason. He can get that contract next offseason as an unrestricted free agent.
Right. Well, again, I think that it's a matter of how he actually feels, and I'm sure you're right. I would actually venture to say you're exactly right in terms of he seems like a betting yourself kind of guy. But we've seen bet on themselves guys lose. I mean, look at a guy like, say, Baker Mayfield. You know, we've seen guys in the NBA bet on themselves and lose. So,
look, I mean, Dennis Schroeder turned down reportedly 4 years, $84 million, thinking that he could get that elsewhere. He could get a better deal elsewhere. And now look at Dennis Schroeder. Like, he had to take a 1 year deal, low money. And I'm not saying that Colin is Schroeder, but I'm saying, like, polarizing players like that, betting on yourself doesn't always lead to the outcome that you're hoping to get.
Right. No, you're 100% right. 100% right. Well, we'll see what happens as we go forward here. Cavaliers still very much in off-season mode. Guys getting their rest, getting ready to come back for training camp. And next, what, September wouldn't be next month because it's not yet August, but soon. But a little bit over a month from that point. Anything else, Chris, as we wrap up this episode of the Money Gold Talk podcast?
No, I don't think so. Just like all I said, doesn't feel like Collins in a rush to sign, and it doesn't feel like the Cavs are in a rush to bid against themselves. There's an offer that they feel like is reasonable, a multi-year offer that they've extended that they feel like is reasonable, and that doesn't mean that they're right. It doesn't mean that it is reasonable. It depends who you ask whether or not it's reasonable. But they feel like it is. And they feel like there's no need to bid against themselves because nobody else is making an offer.
Right. Nope. It makes sense. It makes sense. We will, if and when that happens, we will definitely try to, try to get on as soon as possible and, you know, talk about what the future is for Colin and the Cavaliers, but it could be a situation when there's nothing, you know what I mean? When Colin just plays and that's that. So we'll see. It'll be very interesting. In the meantime, go to cleveland.com/Cavs. Click the blue banner at the top of the page. Sign up for Chris's subtext. You will get that Colin Sexton news before anybody else. Send straight to your phone. $3.99 a month, 14-day free trial. Go to cleveland.com/Cavs. Click the blue banner at the top of the page and enter your mobile number. From there, it's pretty self-explanatory and pretty easy. So like I said, go check out Chris's updates. You will get up-to-the-minute insight analysis news sent straight to your phone. Chris, appreciate you joining us. Continue to enjoy your summer. Continue to enjoy your time with your family. And continue to get recharged for what will be a fun Cleveland Cavaliers season for sure. I am just about at the point where training camp is going to take over my life. So I think any recharging is just about done for me. It's about over. So, and I have two weddings this weekend. So I think it's just about done for me.
You make sure that you film those Josh Rosen highlights from training camp.
Don't get me started.
Bullets that he's going to throw to David Bell. Let's go.
Oh baby. It's going to happen. I mean, you know, and I'm at a wedding tonight and tomorrow night. And I will personally guarantee you on this podcast that when I am either in the middle of like a cocktail hour or something, this Deshaun Watson news is going to break and I'm going to be SOL. It's just facts.
Isn't that how it always goes?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It's just facts. I was like, I'm on PTO for the next 2 days. Like I'm in PTO today, PTO tomorrow. Like I was going to leave my phone at home and I'm like, nope, definitely can't do that.
Yeah. Holly and I have planned to take Elliot to the Columbus Zoo and spend a weekend in Columbus and hopefully see our friends, our best friends down there as well, who we consider family.
That's a beautiful idea. I went to Ohio State and I had a close family friend who I babysat for and I took their girls there all the time. And it's a wonderful, wonderful place for kids. So and it's fun for adults too. I mean, I don't know. I think it's cool to see the animals.
Yeah, I just feel like that's the weekend where Colin Sexton is going to figure out what he wants to do.
Yeah, well, of course. While you're in the middle of the bull exhibit, if there's a bull,
exactly,
there's got to be a bull there somewhere. I don't know. Yeah, that's exactly when it'll come down. All right. Well, in the meantime, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you. And Chris, keep on getting re-energized for the season.
I will. You got it, man.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. We appreciate you. We will talk to you soon. Take care.